Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1938. Once again, we bring you Good News of 1938, an hour behind the scenes in Hollywood, brought to you direct from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, home of Hollywood's greatest stars. Now let's picture ourselves on our famous Soundstage 30, where today they've been shooting scenes with Myrna Loy from Test Pilot. Tonight, stars and players have crowded onto this stage to hear and take part in our Good News program. And what a program! We're going to hear Myrna Loy, Wallace Beery, Lionel Barrymore, Fanny Bryce, Frank Morgan, and many others, as well as Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. And here's the young man who will welcome you to this hour of grand entertainment, the popular young chap, Jimmy Stewart.
Hello, everybody. Well, I guess you've gathered from Ted Pearson's opening remarks that tonight's program is really something. And right now, I want to present the first...
Oh, excuse me, James.
Frank Morgan! Hey!
You said Frank? That's Frank. Me. Yeah. Isn't it? Well, Jimmy, I just wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Oh, thanks, Frank. That Christmas was last week, but...
Was it? Well, that's funny, and here it is again. Well, my time certainly does fly.
Yeah, Frank, I think you're just a little confused. New Year's Day is the next big holiday on the schedule. See, that's the day after tomorrow.
Oh, of course, certainly. That's what I wanted to do, wish you a happy New Year.
Oh, well, thank you, Frank. I'd like to wish you the same.
Well, thank you. And by the way, where are you going to spend New Year's Eve?
Oh, I just a little party at home, having in some friends. And...
Yeah, well, I guess I'll go over to Meredith Wilson's house. He usually has a little gathering on New Year's Eve.
He does. Did Meredith invite you?
Did he invite you? Well, no, not exactly. But, we've been friends for a long time, and if he's having a party, I know I'll be more than welcome.
I don't know, Frank. I have always been a little leery about breaking in on a party uninvited, you know.
Oh, well, I can see how you feel, but with Meredith and me, it's different. he'd probably feel hurt if I didn't show up at his party. I've always been there. He'll no doubt ask me before the program's over tonight. Of course, he'll invite me. My wife and his wife are the best of friends, too. I wonder why he hasn't asked me already.
I don't know.
Well, he'll invite me. It's absurd to think of it being any other way, certainly. But, supposing he doesn't invite me. Oh, but he will, of course. I remember at the time I loaned him $200 to get him out of... Well, there's no reason why he shouldn't invite me. Oh, sure he will. I don't, come to think of it, he'd have a lot of nerve not to invite me. Who does he think he is, anyway, and after all I've done for him? Having a party and not inviting his old pal Morgan, he can't do that to me.
Well, hello, Frank.
Yes, well, now just get this, Mr. Wilson. I wouldn't come to your party if you were going to play Run, Sheep, Run and Post Office. You've got a lot of... Your friends, you are. You're
hey,
a fine...
What's he talking about, Johnny?
Funny. I think he just talked himself in and out of your New Year's Eve party, Meredith.
My party? Why, just this afternoon he invited me to spend New Year's Eve at his house.
Oh, at his house, huh? Well, I don't know what this is all about. Well, Meredith, sing something, will you?
Me? Sing something?
Yeah, sing or play. Morgan's got me all mixed up here. Play.
Thank you.
tied that up and ready the ribbons, Meredith.
Well, thanks a whole lot, Jimmy.
And now, here's that little girl you're all waiting to hear. That amazing, alarming, maddening creation of Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks.
Snooks, where are you going?
No place, Daddy.
You're acting very suspiciously. What have you been doing, Snooks?
Playing with all the little boys and girls, Daddy.
Then what are you doing in the house, rummaging through the silver closet?
I'm looking for a spoon.
Well, what do you want with a spoon?
I want to look down Tommy Hutchins' throat.
You want to look down Tommy Hutchins' throat?
Yeah, he swallowed the key.
Well, what key?
The key to the trunk. And I need the key, Daddy.
Well, what do you want to get into that trunk for?
I don't want to get in. Mary wants to get out.
You locked little Mary Hutchins in the trunk?
I didn't mean to lock her in, Daddy.
Oh, you didn't, eh?
She crept in after Dickie.
Dickie and Mary locked in a trunk? Snooks, this is terrible. Why did you do it?
So they couldn't tell who locked Nursie in the closet.
Oh, Snooks, you're a very naughty child. I don't know what to do with you.
Should I go stand in the corner, Daddy?
No, come here. Now, Snooks, you've got to learn to be a good girl. Listen, I want to tell you the story of a very, very good man who never harmed anyone. Yet through his goodness, he conquered the fiercest animals in the whole world.
Is it about you, Daddy?
No, it's the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Now, once upon a time, there was a good man named Daniel.
Daniel who?
Oh, just Daniel. And one day, Daniel was carried away from his home in Jerusalem by a wicked king.
What was he carried in?
Oh, I don't know. He was just carried away.
In an airplane?
No.
In an automobile?
No, he was carried away on a camel.
Who?
Daniel. Now, the wicked king carried him away.
What wicked king?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar?
Nebuchadnezzar. He carried Daniel into captivity.
What Daniel?
The Daniel we're talking about.
What are we talking about?
Snooks, I want you to pay close attention or I'll spank you. Now, Daniel became the king's favorite. And one day the king said...
What king?
Nebuchadnezzar! He said to him...
Said to who?
To Daniel.
What did he say to him?
That's just what I'm going to tell you. He said to him...
Who said to him?
The king. The king said to him...
Why?
For no reason at all. He just said to him, my good man...
Who's good man?
Listen, Snooks. The king said to Daniel, I like you very much.
Hmm?
I like you very much.
I like you too, Daddy.
All right, Snooks, all right. Well, the king wanted him to do something wrong. He wanted him to lie to the people.
Daniel wanted him to lie?
No, the wicked king. And when Daniel refused to do anything wrong, he was thrown into a den of fierce lions.
Were they real lions?
Why, of course. Real fierce lions. And who do you think threw Daniel to the lions?
Huh?
Who threw Daniel to the lions? Well, why are you crying?
I didn't do it.
I know you didn't. The king threw Daniel to the lions. And although the king expected to see Daniel torn to pieces, he was not.
Who was not?
Daniel.
What Daniel?
The good man.
What good man?
Have you been paying any attention to me at all?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what have I been telling you? You tell me.
All right. There was once a lion called Daniel who took a very good man and threw him at the king. And the king didn't want to do nothing wrong, so he bit the lion. Oh, Mommy. Mommy, quick, come here.
What is it, dear? What happened?
I think Daddy jumped out of the window.
Now, I want you to hear a success story. The story of a little girl who was discovered in the East by an MGM talent scout and is now in Hollywood. Hey, Frida Starr. Come on up here. Hey, and I'll stand up on here. Boy, you're little, aren't you? Now, Frida, we'd like to know a little something about you. Now, where'd you come from?
I come from Brooklyn.
Oh, I see. And how old are you, Frida?
13.
How'd you happen to take up singing?
The teacher at school heard me singing in the hall one day.
Uh-huh.
And she said I ought to study voice, and so I did.
Oh, you did, huh? Well, tell me, Frida, how did the MGM talent scout happen to discover you?
On account of Brooklyn, I guess.
Well, how on account of Brooklyn?
I sang at the school in Brooklyn, and somebody was in the audience that had a friend. And the friend had a cousin that knew Mr. Altman.
Oh, Mr. Altman, that MGM talent scout, huh?
Yes, sir.
And that's what brought you here, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well.
That's right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Frieda Starr will sing Romney Light.
Our guest on the Maxwell House program was the most gracious and charming lady who has been crowned queen of the screen. We're very happy to have her with us again tonight. Miss Myrna Loy.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Now, Miss Loy is going to play a part of Nancy Turner in a sketch called Sweet Mystery, written for her by George Oppenheimer.
Yes. And Jimmy Stewart plays the part of Alan Turner, Nancy's husband.
Oh, yeah. Miss Loy, I just want to take a little time here before we start this sketch to tell you that you've always been my dream girl, Miss Loy. I just wanted to tell you.
Thank you, Jim.
I just wanted to get that in here. Well, anyway, the scene is Nancy's house, and we look in on a wedding ceremony.
Do you, Nancy Smith, take this man to be your lawful husband? Do you promise to love, honor, comfort, and cherish him in sickness and in health, in prosperity and in adversity, and for better or worse, so long as you both shall live?
I do.
before these witnesses, I, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the state, and in the name of the church, do now pronounce you husband and wife.
Anybody seen the bride?
You're too late, Roger. She's upstairs dressing.
I'm always too late. Just think, I was head man with Nancy until Alan Turner came along.
Oh, it's wonderful. They meet, and 2 weeks later, they're married. Oh.
Look, hey, here they come. Look, there they are. Hey, say, don't
forget.
Goodbye, buddy.
Goodbye, everybody. Darling.
I'll make that double.
Oh, careful, darling. Keep your eyes on the road.
Well, I'm sorry. That's impossible unless you get out of the car.
You know, I feel something like chicken curry. There isn't an inch of me that isn't covered with rice.
That's my favorite dish.
Oh, Alan, just think. 2 weeks ago, I didn't even know you.
No.
And now?
Well, now you still don't. Would you mind just keeping on saying that for the rest of the trip, huh?
We'll say it for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, you know, we're going to be a couple of awfully dull conversationalists, but we'll like it, huh?
Of course, we'll say other things, too.
Oh, yeah, of course, like pass the salt, and I need more money, and the baby's crying. And...
Well, you have made plans.
Oh, sure. Then, of course, there's that unfinished business of finding all about each other, you know.
That's the wonderful part of it, Alan. Most people, when they marry, know everything. There's nothing to find out. There's no mystery, no glamour.
That's right, darling. We'll just spend our lives finding out things about ourselves. Wonderful things.
Darling, would you be very disappointed if I told you I'd had a very dull past?
Well, I'd break your neck if you hadn't. Say, hey, by the way, who was that strange-looking cluck that kept kissing you all the time back there?
That strange-looking cluck, Mr. Turner, happened to be my brother. He came all the way from England for the wedding.
Oh, well, I guess he just hadn't gotten his land legs yet. Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's nothing. He's just weaving a good deal.
Elmer does not weave.
Elmer? Huh? What, your brother named Elmer?
And what, may I ask, is so funny about Elmer? He was named after my grandfather, and he was a general in the war between the states.
Oh, which side?
Confederate, of course.
Well, what do you mean, of course? You know, there were generals on the Union side, too. For instance, my grandfather.
Oh, your grandfather fought on the Union side.
He did?
Well.
Well, what do you mean?
I was just wondering if there is something in heredity after all.
Well, my grandfather's side won.
That's right. Rub it in.
No, now, darling, hasn't anybody told you the war is over? No, you... In the name of the North, I'd like a kiss.
In the name of the South, I surrender. Thank you, Junior.
Junior? Where'd you get that Junior stuff?
I don't know. Oh, yes, I do, too. Who was that badly dressed woman at the wedding? She'd had one drink too many, and she kept calling you Junior.
Well, that badly dressed woman happens to be married to my brother Stu.
Well, she was certainly living up to your brother's name.
No, well, now, that's not very funny. That's not very funny. And what's more, she's a very fine woman. She had welfare committees and...
I didn't say she wasn't fine. All I said was that she was badly dressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you want to go into costume, that Uncle Archie of yours, when he came up to me, I thought he was going to give me a tip on a horse or something.
Uncle Archie's one of the sweetest men in the world. I do hope I haven't married a man who's going to turn out to be a snob.
Oh, snob. Well, at least I held on to myself better than some of your Democratic friends, you know.
Just who are you referring to?
Well, who? I don't know. You're referring to that old friend Peter or somebody or other. Yeah, he fell asleep under the piano, you know that.
Poor Peter. I wondered why he didn't come to kiss me goodbye.
You wondered why I didn't? Well, I'll tell you. One of your other dear friends was holding on to you like a clam. What's that guy's name? Roger?
I suppose you mean Roger Ormsby. Well, it just so
happened... That's the one, Ormsby, that guy. I bet he kissed you goodbye 50 times.
Why, Alan, you're jealous.
No, I'm not jealous. I'm just observant, that's all. It isn't very pleasant for a guy to have his wife mauled all over the room by a whole lot of strange men.
Oh, now you're making me out cheap.
No, I never said that.
No, but you implied it. And don't drive so fast.
Well, now you're going to tell me how to drive.
I merely said don't drive so fast.
Nah, I guess I know how to drive.
That's only a guess.
Well, if there's anything I hate, it's a backseat driver.
This is a fine start to honeymoon. Married 1 hour and you hate me already.
No, I didn't say that.
You did too.
Well, I said I hated backseat drivers.
Don't tell me what you said. I heard you, and stop going so fast.
I'm not going fast.
You're going over 60.
Nonsense.
It says 65 on your speedometer.
The speedometer's wrong.
Aha.
That's fine. That's all we need.
Pull over there. Pull over. Well, where's the fire?
Gee.
How fast do you think you were going, young fella?
Well, I don't know.
Officer. We were only going 40 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah? I had you clocked at 65.
65? Why, Alan, darling, your speedometer must be broken.
Yeah, that's right, officer. It said 40, didn't it, sweets?
Yes, darling.
Come on, skip the mush and get down to business. You was going 65.
Well, officer, it was this way.
We were just married.
Oh, yeah? I've heard that one before.
But look, officer, Rice.
Yes, Rice. If you don't believe that, here's a piece of wedding cake.
Well, I'd ought to run you in.
Oh, officer, you wouldn't. Just as we're starting on our honeymoon?
Yeah, it might affect our whole married life, you know.
All right, I'll let you go, but don't let it happen again.
Oh, thank you, officer.
Ah, thanks a lot, old man.
Okay, thanks for the wedding cake. I'll take it home to the missus.
Wasn't he sweet?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Alan.
Yes, Nancy.
I love you, darling.
I love you, Nancy. And forget about what I said about Roger and the rest of them.
I'm sorry about your sister-in-law.
Oh, forget it.
Oh, darling, I'm so glad that cop came along.
Yeah, so am I.
We'll never fight again.
No. I'll never be jealous either.
I wish I knew his name. We ought to be grateful to him for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, he's a swell guy.
And handsome, too.
Notice that.
Of course.
Too bad he wasn't at the wedding. He could have kissed the bride.
There you go implying things again. And don't drive so fast.
Well, who's driving fast now?
You are. You're over 60 again.
I am not.
You are too.
I am not.
Alan.
Yeah?
You better bring out the rice and cake, dear. That man's here again.
Thank you, Myrna Loy. And now, Ted Pearson.
Hello, Jimmy. Friends, standing beside me is the head of the commissary, where everyone here meets for lunch. Her job is to provide meals for the stars, executives, directors, writers, cameramen, and extras, which makes her practically house mother to the entire MGM family, Mrs. Frances Edwards.
Good evening, everyone.
Now, Mrs. Edwards, what's the size of that official family of yours? How many persons do you serve on an average day?
About 2,200.
Ooh, you serve 2,200 people a day. My, that's a lot of people.
I should say it is a lot of hungry people.
Speaking of food, how many cups of Maxwell House coffee does your family drink every day?
Well, let's see. Of course, beside the commissary, we have a coffee shop adjoining where the stars and others drop in for coffee and a bite to eat during the afternoon. I'll tell you about what some of our famous people like to eat with their coffee soon, sometime later. But to get back to you, we serve from 2,400 to 2,600 cups of Maxwell House coffee a day, not counting what we send out to companies shooting at night. And I'd say that's a lot of good coffee.
Agreed, Mrs. Edwards. It is good coffee. But tell me, is Maxwell House an economical coffee for you to buy?
I've certainly found it so. You know, using coffee in the quantities I do, I find I get more full-flavored cups per pound of Maxwell House because of the way it's packed in the vacuum can. Why, of course, it's always roaster fresh, not only when I buy it, but when I use it.
Thank you, Mrs. Edwards. And remember, friends, you too may buy as many cans of Maxwell House at a time as you like, whether 3 pounds or 300 pounds, as Mrs. Edwards does. And always know the last can you open will be just as fresh and full-flavored as the first can. And this full flavor means full value, means more cups per pound of Maxwell House, more of that rich, rare goodness of this coffee that's always good to the last drop.
Meredith Wilson continues our good news of 1938 with one of the best tunes from the Jeanette McDonald, Alan Jones musical, The Firefly, The Donkey Serenade. Thank you.
lots of stars here on stage 30 tonight, but there's one star who was here before any of them. He's made a picture with all of them, I guess, and there's not one single one of them that hasn't learned something from him. Tomorrow, his latest picture, The Bad Man of Brimstone, will open in your favorite theater, and he's here tonight to tell us a little about it. Wally Berry.
Thank you, Jimmy.
They tell me Brimstone turned out great, Wally. What kind of a part do you play in it?
Well, let me see. I guess I play one of those tough guys.
Well, how tough are you?
Well, I was tough enough to shoot myself in the leg. They call me Trigger Bill. That's when the picture starts. But along comes a young fellow named Jeff Burton that's going to clean me up. And who do you think he turns out to be?
Who?
Well, my own son.
Oh, I see.
So I can't be tough with him, can't shoot my own kiddo, even though he's aiming to ruin me and my gang.
Well, that's quite a situation.
Yeah, that's a great spot. The boy doesn't know I'm his paw, so he beats me up and I can't do anything about it. The worst part of it is that I got to fight on the side of the law and order just to help him. Well, I finally become a sort of a mayor in one of the big scenes, the pictures, where he's trying to arrest my crooked sheriff, Black Jack McCready. Both of them, my kid, Jeff, and Black Jack, are standing in front of a bar about to pull the guns on each other. So here we go.
You Black Jack McCready?
Which I'm the same. You're the new marshal, Jeff Burton, huh? I've been craving to meet you for a long while.
Black Jack, it's my duty to order you just once to give up them guns.
Make your fight.
Okay, if that's the way you want it.
Drop them guns. Drop them guns. I'll kill the both of you.
Stay where you are, Bill.
Keep out, Bill. This time I'm doing it my way.
There's neither of you doing nothing. Me and Trigger Bill, I'm still a head man around here. Any shooting that either one of you starts, I'll finish.
You told me you killed this fellow, Bill.
Well, what about it?
You lied to me.
Of course I lied to you. I felt like lying. I reckon I relish it. Better start relishing it, too, Blackjack. You're getting bigger than your boots.
Get out of the way, Bill. I'm going to start shooting.
I'm standing right here, McCready.
Get out of here, Bill. I don't need your help.
Jeff, you hold your jaw. I've had enough of you horning into my town. What'd you have to come back here for anyways? You don't belong here.
Your sheriff's resisting arrest, and it's my job to take him.
You want your first job to be a murder? Now stand where you are. I'll get the shooting irons and Blackjack.
Well, I'll make it fast, then.
Give me them shooting irons, Blackjack.
Now, wait a minute, Bill. Just don't come no further, because I'd just as leave kill the both of you together. You ain't getting by with this twice.
I'm getting by with anything that I've a mind to. You remember this one thing. When you pull them triggers, it'll be the last move that you'll ever make, because I'll throw my brand into you before you hit the floor.
What are you making this fight for?
Can't them details wait until after the election? Sure. I'll tell you about this later. We can show Brimstone that we're honest citizens. That any of our party can stand a legal trial without fear or favor.
I can see sense in that.
So you're surrendering to the marshal, Blackjack. McCready, justice has got to be done.
All right.
I knew you'd say it my way, Blackjack. Marshal, there's your man.
It was mighty fine, partner.
Well, thanks, Tenderfoot. How long would you say it took that scene to play?
Well, about 3 minutes, I guess. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Jim, it's not right. Nobody's ever seen those people who work behind the scenes. Nobody ever hears about them, but without them, no picture could be made.
Yeah, that's true, but I guess there's not much you can do about it.
Yes, sir, it is. We can at least give the public a chance to meet them.
Yeah, well, I think that's a swell idea, Wally.
Well, that's what I thought. So I'd like to have you meet the man who made the sets for The Bad Man of Brimstone, the art director of MGM, Cedric Gibbons.
Thank you, Wally.
Oh, a new Cedric Gibbons, huh? Tell me, Cedric, what do you think is the most important person connected with the making of pictures?
There's no question, Wally. The scene designer. No doubt about it. What would a movie be like without sets?
Well, a picture like Brimstone, nature made all the mountains, trees, and things like that.
But unfortunately, Wally, nature didn't make those things according to script. So we even had to design and build nature's handiwork. We had to fix nature up the same as any actress, so she's camera-proof.
So a designer can make a tree, too, huh?
Certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we've got to build whole cities or towns. I don't suppose you gave it much thought, but how do you suppose the town of Brimstone found itself on the MGM lot when you were shooting Bad Man of Brimstone? We built it. Planned it just as if we were building a real town where people actually live.
Well, too bad some of those props weren't as real as the town.
Which props do you mean, Wally?
Well, in the saloon, you know, the bottles.
Well, we're only worried about the camera. If a substitute for the real thing photographs as well and is more economical, we use it. In this case, what was in those bottles photographed perfectly.
Yeah, you should have tasted it.
You're not supposed to drink the props, boy.
Yeah, well, don't worry. It's the last time. Well, Cedric, I'm glad you were here tonight. I wish I could bring all of them, like I said before, hundreds of them that you never see. As for Cedric Gibbons and myself, I like to say so long.
Ted Pearson, there's that good old smell of coffee again. Must be coming from that old Maxwell house right across the way.
Mm-hmm. Sure is appetizing, isn't it, Jimmy? Let's invite the folks in, shall we, to have a steaming cup of Maxwell house coffee?
That's a swell idea, Ted. Yeah, let's all go over and enjoy again our favorite custom. A cheery, friendly cup of Maxwell house coffee. And while we're about it, this is a good chance to say Happy New Year to everybody. May the year 1938 bring you health and happiness and prosperity. And, Meredith, while we're in for a cup of Maxwell House, how about a tune?
We pause now for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
It's Jimmy Stewart again, and we're continuing our good news of 1938 with Wally Berry, Myrna Loy, Frank Morgan, and right now you're going to hear from Franny Bryce. Imagine a small apartment in New York City. At home, Mr. and Mrs. Sam Garfinkel, and they're worried about money.
Sam, we owe 2 months' rent. There's no food in the house. When you going to go out and look for a job?
Shady, one of these days my inventions are going to make me rich. I don't work like other men. I work with my brain. Even when I was a night watchman, I invented something to keep out boilers.
Yeah, and you couldn't get out yourself.
Listen. For all you know, I may even get rich yet from that sweepstakes ticket I bought.
Don't mention that ticket. You took my last $2.50 that I was saving for a permanent wave. Sweepstakes. Come in.
Mrs. Garfinkel, a cablegram from Ireland.
A cablegram from Ireland? Thank you. Sam, is somebody in Ireland interested in your invention?
Why not? It's an automatic potato peeler. Come on, Nu, open up already.
Wait. I'll read it to you. Oi.
Oi, Sam. A terrible thing has happened.
Well, what's the matter?
Oi, we won the sweepstakes.
So what are you crying?
Because I can't believe it.
Don't be foolish.
Keep... Look at me. I'm calm. Sweepstakes we won. Yippee.
What are you laughing like a goyle? Sam, we're rich.
Yes. If our horse wins, we'll collect $150,000 and retire.
You know, Sam, for the first time since I know you, you look handsome.
Ah.
Hey, what's the name of our horse?
Sahara.
Sarah, that's my sister.
Not Sarah, Sahara. And if Sahara wins, then we're rich. Not before.
Come in.
How do you do? My name is Sanford. I represent a London syndicate that buys up winning sweepstakes tickets. I've come to make you an offer for your ticket.
Well, how much would you offer, for instance?
I'm willing to give you $5,000 for half interest, so you still have a chance to win on the other half.
What do you say, Sadie? Would you like to sell half the ticket or keep it all?
If it was possible, I'd like to do both. But you can't have your ticket needed.
You'll have to decide right away, as they're soon running the race. And once the race starts, it will be too late.
Quick, Sam, turn on the radio. Maybe they're broadcasting the race.
All right, Sadie.
This is Brad Bradley speaking from Aintree, where the Grand National Steeplechase is due to start in a moment. The weather's cloudy, but the track is fast, and Sahara's the favorite.
Sarah's favorite?
Yes, she's the favorite.
Mr. Stanford, you have the nerve to offer me $5,000 when the horse that's named after my sister is favorite.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Garfinkel, that's the offer. As long as the track is fast, Sahara is the favorite. But should it start to rain and the track gets muddy, Sahara hasn't got a chance. She can't run in the mud. Goodbye.
Sam.
What's the matter, Sadie?
Sam, my corn started to hurt. Oi. I think it's going to rain.
Well, if your corn hoits here, how would it rain in England?
Well, I got a very big corn.
Quiet. Listen to the radio.
The horses are coming up for a start. There are dark clouds gathering.
Oi, my goodness.
There's a thunderstorm brewing.
Oi, I should have sold half for 5,000.
There's a heavy downpour of rain. It's a thunder shower.
Boy, I would take less now.
Ah, but the sun is peeping through the clouds again, and it looks as though the race may beat the storm.
Boy, I wouldn't take 50,000.
Ah, the barriers reach it, they're off. Sahara shoots right out for me.
Sarah, mine darling, my sweetheart, run, and don't let them catch you. Get up, Sarah!
What a race! Sahara's in the lead, but it's beginning to rain again.
Oi.
Oi.
It's beginning to rain in earnest. My gentleman second, and then over third. But now my gentleman is in front.
Aye.
Aye.
Now Sahara is in front. Now my gentleman's in front.
What kind of a gentleman? Don't let a lady go first. Come on, Sarah, I'm begging you. If you are true sister, you wouldn't let me down. Get up, Sarah!
That rain's coming down in torrents. What a storm. Wait, I think Sahara fell.
Oi, are you sure?
No, it wasn't Sahara. It was too light. They're coming up the stretch. They're neck and neck. Four horses are practically near the finish. There'll be a nose finish as sure as you're born.
If it's a nose finish, Sarah will win.
The decision was very, very close. We'll have to wait for the judge's confirmation.
Oi, Sam, I can't live through it.
Here's the decision. The winner...
Yeah, yeah.
Red Rover.
Oi. Well, we wouldn't get 150, but Sarah... But Sarah surely second, so we'll get 75,000.
Second?
Yeah, yeah.
Blue Knight.
Oi. So we wouldn't get 75,000, but Sarah surely third, so we'll get 50,000.
Third?
Yeah, yeah.
My gentleman.
Oh, you call that bum a gentleman? What happened to Sarah?
She's out of the money. The sweepstakes is over, and now the sun is out.
Yeah, and so are we.
Well, Edie Adams. Hey, what's on your mind?
Listen, Jimmy, look up yonder, way up in the sky for heart to ponder, for a little thing for me.
Okay, Edie, now I'm looking up in the sky, but I don't see anything up there.
What's the matter? Are you blind? Come on, Skipper. Tell me what you see up there beside the Big Dipper. Hurry, tell me what you see.
Well, really, Edie, I don't see anything up there in the sky except maybe the moon.
Well, of course, that's what I'm talking about. Ooh, put that moon in the sky just to work its miraculous charm. It isn't fair. Who put it there without putting someone in my arms? Who left me all by myself to sit around and wonder who left me up on the shelf? Who is responsible for that wonder? Who put the moon in the sky just to frown and look down from above? It isn't fair. Who put it there without giving me someone to love?
Now, listen, Edie, you should know the moon's really not to blame. It's all your fault, and you forgot to play the wishing game.
What wishing game?
Well, Edie, that's the moon up there, and you can make a wish to anybody, anywhere.
Well, Jimmy, just for fun, I'm going to try that wishing scheme.
Oh, you are, huh?
Here I go. I'll wish on the moon to bring me a dream or two. Here I stand once more upon the sand of Manicora, moon-enchanted
Yeah.
Have you ever been in New York City on a kind of a, well, you know, one of those nights you don't know exactly what to do to have a little fun, and you've finally dropped into a ticket broker's office to find out what good shows there are in town? Well, if you have, you'll appreciate this George S. Kaufman, Mark Conley skit we're going to present now, with Frank Morgan as the customer and Handley Stafford as the broker. Now, the scene is a ticket agency, and it's on Broadway opposite the Low State Theater, and the ticket broker is behind his desk, and his telephone has just started to ring.
Hello? McTyson Ticket Agency. Two for the Astor Theater? Yes, they'll be $18 apiece. Well, why so much? Well, you see, I have to get them from another broker, and he has to get them from me. Sorry.
Oh, is this the McTyson Ticket Agency?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. As long as the name was printed on the window, it'd been silly to be some other place, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Are you Mr. McTyson?
Yes, sir, and what can I do for you?
Well, of course, you don't know me from Adam, but, well, Adam would look a good deal older than I do. I said, you should know me from Adam. After all, I'm dressed. Yes. Well, I might as well tell you, my name is Pritchard, Mr. Pritchard.
How are you, Mr. Pritchard?
Oh, there's a little matter I'd like to take up with you if you've got the time.
At your service.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, frankly, it's about theater tickets.
I see. Well, I like frankness, Mr. Pritchard. I believe in it.
Good. Then we can talk business.
Absolutely.
You sell theater tickets here?
That's right.
Yes, well, you're looking at a customer.
All right, sir. And what would you like to have? We have tickets for all the leading theaters.
Well, could I see some?
Now, here you are. I don't think you'll find a finer collection of tickets anywhere in the city. Now, just take a look at that one.
Oh, say, that's lovely.
Kind of rub your hand over it.
Oh, it's smooth as velvet.
Nice?
Yes, sir. That certainly is a nice ticket. Mm-hmm. Have you any blue ones?
No, I haven't. Been quite a demand for blue ones this season. They go pretty early.
Yes, well, this is a nice ticket, all right. I hope you don't think I'm funny, but there's one under there that I'd just love to have.
Why, certainly. Yes. This one?
No, not that. You're warm, though.
This one?
No, not that. This is fun.
well, now wait. Don't tell me.
No, I won't.
This little fella?
That's it.
Well, I certainly want to congratulate you. You've picked out a very pretty ticket. Very pretty.
Yes, it doesn't break a set, does it?
No, no. Oh.
Well, may I hold it? I just want to see if it fits my pocketbook.
Why, sure.
Yes, say, it fits perfectly. Looks cute there, too, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah. Oh, see this picture in my wallet? That's mm-hmm. my niece.
You don't say.
Yes. Homely, isn't she?
Yes. But getting back to tickets, I think you'll like this one. It costs $5.79.
How much?
$5.79, with the tax.
Oh, no. Well, I'm afraid I couldn't. No.
Too high price?
Yes, that's...
Well, how about this one?
Well, that looks all right.
The $3.84.
Oh, no. That'd still be...
Still too high, huh?
Yes.
How about $2.67?
No.
Not $2.67 either.
No, you see, I figure in these times...
All right, sir. I think I have just what you... Oh, here you are, sir. $1.89.
No, I wouldn't pay that.
You won't pay $1.89?
I couldn't think of it.
I see. But you want to see a show.
Oh, yes.
And you won't pay $1.89?
No.
Uh-huh. Maybe you'd like a pass.
Oh, do you handle those?
Oh, sure. Just for cases like this.
Good shows, of course.
Oh, yes.
Well, that sounds all right. Yes, I'll take one, if you don't mind.
That's the spirit. Now we understand each other.
Oh, do we? Well, I'm not a hard man.
No. I knew you'd listen to reason.
Yeah.
Well, now we can talk business.
Yes, sir. What's your proposition?
Well, we've got a very nice list of shows here. All depends on what you'd like. How about a good mystery play?
Oh, no, I don't think I'd care to see one. They frighten me.
All right, sir, what do you say to a straight drama?
No, that's tiresome, don't you think?
Well, it's up to you, sir. We want to please you and get your repeat order.
Well, I'll tell you the kind of thing I'd like to see. Of course, I don't think there's anything just like it playing right now.
Oh, that's all right. Maybe we could get it up for you.
Well, you remember the Ziegfeld Folly?
Oh, yes.
And Grand Hotel, that was awfully good.
I remember.
Yes, well, I'd just love to see a sort of a combination of the two.
I see. Just a minute till I'll write that down.
Yes.
Now, let's see. Ziegfeld Follies and Grand Hotel. There.
Yes, that ought to be good. Yes, sir, I'd like to see that. And I'll tell you something. I'll give you a very valuable pointer for your business. There's hundreds of others just like me. People would flock to a show like that.
At the same price.
Yes, sir. Mm. You know, this is the way to get people back to the theater.
Yeah, probably get quite a run out of it. Now, whom would you like to have in it?
Oh, well, now, there you are. That's a big thing.
Yes, it is.
Yes, I want to think about that for a minute.
Oh, plenty of time.
Yes, let me see. Eddie Cantor.
Well, he's working, but maybe it could be arranged for one night.
Oh, I think if he were made to understand.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
Yes.
Eddie
Cantor. Alfred Lund. I like him a lot.
Alfred Lund.
Beatrice Lilly.
Oh, there I have to disappoint you. She's out of town.
Oh, couldn't make it, you think, huh?
Well, she's in Pittsburgh. Never get here for one night.
Oh, well, I'm kind of disappointed about that.
Oh, you're not offended?
No, 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 but I can't say I like it.
Well, perhaps we could put on another show later and have her.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, I don't want to lose you.
No. Now then, to get back. The Marx Brothers.
Marx
Brothers. Brothers, yes.
I'll see if I can get them.
Yes, and oh yes, you remember I showed you a picture of my niece Caroline.
I remember.
Yes, she's very talented. I've often thought that if she could have her chance, you know, this might be a very good opportunity for her.
Do you think we can get her?
Oh yes. Yes, now let me see whom we've got. We've got
Eddie Cantor,
Alfred Lund, the Marx Brothers, and Caroline. Yes, that's a very well-balanced bill.
I like it.
Now, about the theater, could they have some place handy?
Just as you say.
Because one of the troubles of the stage today is that they build the theater so far from people's homes.
I'll tell you what. Suppose I have them come up to your house.
Yes.
Then you won't have to move.
Oh, that'd be splendid.
Mr. Pritchard, you said?
Yes, Eugene Pritchard, 718 and a half West 168th Street. Ring Friedman's bell.
Right.
Yes, Lep Friedman isn't there anymore, but we never changed it.
I see.
If you really want Friedman, you have to go up to the Warwick Hotel.
Well, now, about what time, Mr. Pritchard? 8:45?
Yes, that'll be fine. I hope I don't forget and go out.
Well, Mr. Pritchard, it's been a pleasure to serve you.
Now, you're sure they'll come? I don't want to go all the way home unless there's going to be some entertainment there.
Oh, they'll be there, positively.
Well, that's fine. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You know what, Mr. McTyson? This will not only help restore the legitimate stage, but it'll certainly brighten up my house. Thank you.
And thank you.
And here's some more good news about coffee.
Another thing you'll like. The new Radiant Roast Maxwell House coffee comes in two grinds. The regular grind for percolator or boiled coffee, the special drip grind for glass coffee maker or drip pot method. Either way, you'll be sure of getting rich, full flavor, deeply satisfying coffee. Because to use a grind made specially for your method is the secret for getting the utmost out of your coffee. You'll be glad to know, too, that the new Radiant Roast Maxwell House coffee comes in both 1 and 2 pound cans. So if your family's a large one, buy the 2 pound can for convenience and further economy. Tomorrow, get a can of Radiant Roast Maxwell House coffee. We believe it, you'll find it just the coffee you've been looking for. The coffee that's good to the last drop.
And now we come to the MGM Concert Hall, an institution which is becoming one of the most outstanding features in our good news program, thanks to Meredith Wilson's presentation of his lists of the world's 10 favorite melodies.
Excuse me, Jimmy, but it's not my list. These 10 compositions were chosen by music critics, composers, editors, teachers of music, and the public. In the opinion of this representative group, these 10 melodies are the most popular in the whole field of fine music. Tonight is number 6, the famous Londonderry Air.
for you. Maxwell House Coffee truly brings you special good news tonight.
Could you use $5,000? Would you like a trip to Hollywood?
You have an opportunity to get all this for sending a title and giving reasons for your selection for a great new motion picture that Clarence Brown has directed and which stars...
Walter Houston, Beulah Bondi, James Stewart, and a score of others.
You will now hear Mr. Lionel Barrymore, who tonight will tell you a part of the story for which Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer seeks a title. Mr. Barrymore.
The original title of the story of this picture was Benefits for God, a powerful story of ambition, a burning ambition that knew no bounds, that stifled love, gratitude, and duty to achieve its object. What does a man owe to his father and mother whose loving heart set him out on life's journey? What does a boy owe to the girl who loves him, who believes in him in spite of everything and everybody? These are the central questions in this dramatic story which we want you to choose a title for. It's a story of Ethan Wilkins, a country parson, half pioneer, half preacher, who comes to a small Ohio town in the romantic period of the 1850s. He has with him his wife, a delicate but courageous woman, and his 12-year-old son, Jason. Ethan Wilkins is a two-fisted parson, and his neighbors soon recognize his qualities of greatness. But to his own son, Ethan Wilkins appears a failure. Young Jason Wilkins suffers agonies of shame because he must wear the second-hand clothes which are given his father in lieu of salary. He resents the poverty and misery of their existence. He hates the skimping economies his mother is forced to practice to keep their little household together. All these things arouse in Jason an ambition to go out in the world and make a success of his life. His father feels that the boy should remain at home. They disagree sharply. As Jason grows older, the gap widens between him and his father. For Jason wants to become a doctor. Ethan Wilkins can't sympathize with his son's interest in the science of medicine, holding that it's more important to save men's souls than to repair their bodies. Eventually, this conflict between father and son leads to a disastrous and tragic fight between them, following which the young man leaves home. Now, this is only the first part of the story, which at its close builds to one of the most dramatic scenes that's ever been in any motion picture. It's a marvelous story, and it deserves a great title.
Thank you, Lionel Barrymore. That is a grand story.
Well, wait till you hear it next week.
Lionel, that contest sounds like a wonderful opportunity to me. I think I'm going to try and think up a title.
No, Frank Morgan, you can't compete. No employee of General Foods, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, or Lowe's Incorporated can enter. But you, ladies and gentlemen, you can start thinking tonight. What would you call this picture? In published story form, the title was Benefits for God. It was written by Honoré Moreau.
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer believes a better title can be found. That you, the radio listeners and movie fans of America, can find it. And here are the rules.
Send your title to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, title editor, Post Office Box 7, Culver City, California. And with it, send a short letter, not more than 50 words, explaining why you believe your title is best. All answers must be received by midnight on January 13, 1938. On January 27th, the name of the winner will be announced.
Do not submit more than one title in your letter. Only titles which have not been previously used will be considered. If the title is duplicated, the judges will select a winner on the basis of the best letter accompanying that title. Now, all titles and reasons submitted become the property of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and cannot be returned.
If your title and reason does not win the award of $5,000 and the trip to Hollywood in this contest, remember that Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer reserves the right to use your title in any manner that it sees fit in the future or at any time without compensation.
Judges will be Louis B. Mayer, John W. Considine, Jr., Clarence Brown, James K. McGinnis, and Lawrence Stallings, and their decision will be final.
The person who submits the title and reason for that title, which the judges select as the most suitable, will receive the reward of $5,000 and a trip to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, Culver City, California.
And you'll hear the rest of the details tomorrow. Next week,
you'll hear Fanny Bryce, Frank Morgan, Lionel Barrymore, and Robert Taylor. Sounds like a great show, and remember, your ticket of admission is just your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. So tune in next Thursday and enjoy Good News of 1938. In the meantime, go to the movies and enjoy yourself. Good night, everybody. Happy New Year.
This is the National Broadcasting Company. KFI, Los Angeles.